I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah, plantain, plantain. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. This is your host, Dean. And per usual, I'm here with the gang. Actually, it's not even per usual. I'm here with the full gang, the full SPS Arsenal gang. But before we get into it, I should introduce people. Let me stop being rude. Gabby, how are you?
Feeling great. Fuck Newcastle. Anybody who wears black and white, fuck you too.
Take that, Juventus. Fuck you guys. Mitch, what's going on?
I'm feeling good, but I was so fucking mad, like, for 2 hours to where, like, I still haven't even, like, fully processed and, like, been able to feel that, like, I'm so jealous of Coach and Gabby right now because they're feeling just an amount of joyfulness that I haven't let myself achieve today. And I'm kind of mad about that because usually I'm the one that's just, like, head over heels happy about everything. But I was so pissed off for 2 hours that I'm still, like, a little pissed off, even though we won. I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, the angrier you get, the more you look like Jerry Gillett, you know, so leave that shit behind, bro. Coach, you had a minute to get an instant reaction out. Haven't heard it yet. I'm sure it's pretty good per usual, but how are you feeling at the moment?
The elation in my heart right now has nothing to do with Arsenal Football Club. I just know that going home, Joe Linton is probably going to beat on some small animals on the way home because he can't do anything else but do that. He's an animal himself. I know Bruno Guimarães is probably going to, he may or may not commit a hate crime, I don't know, but he just needs to get his anger out one way or another. Jason Tindall is probably going to cry into his mirror as he applies his fake tan. Eddie Howe, I don't even know, fuck Eddie Howe anyway, but they're all so sad. It just makes me so happy, man. Seriously, man. Thank you. Wow. Thank you for that, Arsenal.
I'm glad to hear that Schadenfreude is working great for you today, Coach. You know, I too feel great. But mainly because Arsenal won. I don't really care about Newcastle like that. Fuck them motherfuckers. But before we get into it today, we're trying some new things on the pod. Question of the day, folks. Gabby, what movie have you seen lately that you liked? Give people a recommendation.
That I've liked?
Yes.
Oh, recently I went to go watch Caught Stealing, which we were talking about before the pod started. Also, if my voice sounds fucked up, that's because I was screaming my head off when Gabriel scored that goal. And I can feel it. Caught Stealing is definitely a definite. If it's still in the theaters, go watch it. That was it. And don't watch any trailers for it. Go into it knowing nothing. It's better.
All right. Believe the black woman. Mitch, what have you seen lately?
I watched One Battle After Another yesterday, and that movie fucking rules. It is so, so good.
I agree. I too saw that this weekend. Coach, do you guys have movies in England? That's the question for you.
We don't, unfortunately. I'm joking. Do you know what? I was rewatching some Guy Ritchie films. So an underrated one of these, I think, is actually Rock and Roller.
It is.
That's a really, really underrated one. And it's probably one that a lot of people wouldn't even know that Idris Elba was in until you actually watch it. But yeah, really good film.
Damn it, Coach, spoilers! What the fuck, man?
But yeah, as usual, Guy Ritchie is the master of writing top-tier dialogue. Amazing film. I still really like it, so yeah.
He's like Tarantino with less M-bombs. That's basically what he is. So that makes him worse, actually.
Yeah, well, he's not a degenerate, so, you know.
All right, now that we've proven to the listeners that we're cultured people, let's talk about some football things. Before we get into the lineup, where we usually start, I would like for us to take a moment to rejoice because our guy, Big William Saliba, has renewed for 5 years with the Arsenal. Gabby, how'd that make you feel?
Makes me feel great. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there who were saying a lot of things about Saliba before he even got to Arsenal when he was still at St. Etienne doing his thing. And then after, he's going to leave us. He's going to do this. There's some Liverpool fans out there who are running their fucking gums, flapping their gums, saying, you know, we could come in and do a cheeky bid for some. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. We don't lose our players to Real Madrid.
You know, I think the most funny thing she said in there was that they were flapping their gums, because I was like, why didn't she say mouth? Is she trying to say scholars don't have teeth? Like, that's so rude. Like, you know, we don't want to get into English stereotypes. We'll leave that to Coach, you know, since he's the English one among us. But damn, that was cold, Gabby. Appreciate it, Coach.
To be honest, I'm really pleased more than anything the fact that it's the message that it sends. I think it's a lost art in football of saying much, of saying something without saying a lot, basically. And him signing is just, it speaks a thousand words. It tells the world that Arsenal are not going anywhere, basically, because I don't think any successful team can win without having a defender like that at the heart of what they do. And the fact that he's committed to the club, he's committed to the manager, he's committed to the team for another five, that his best years are going to be at Arsenal. His best physical years, shall I say, are going to be at Arsenal. So that's just, it's amazing for me.
Yeah, tremendous. Let's get into the lineup. You're going to start us off with this. Let's just get to the most controversial thing in the lineup. The last time we all spoke, I feel as if we all agreed that Trossard, great off the bench, should stay on the bench. Then the lineup comes out today, Mitch, and I see Trossard in the lineup. But I'll read the whole thing out before I let you react to the Trossard inclusion. It was Raya, Timber, Mosquera. That's strange. We'll talk about that. Gabriel, Calafiori, Zubimendi, Rice, Eze, Saka, Trossard, and Gyökeres. But back to Trossard, Mitch. Why was he there?
I don't know. I don't really know what to make of him right now. He just kind of confuses me at the moment. Because, like, he's doing some cool shit every once in a while. But he's also, like, there was a point in this game, like, in the first half where he was, like, popping up at, like, right back. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Like, where are you being told to play? What is going on right now? But, like, with Madueke's injury, and clearly we played Eze in midfield, I think it made sense to either start him or Martinelli. And Martinelli's performance off the bench last week, I don't blame Arteta for wanting Martinelli to be the one coming off the bench, because he's just so effective against tired legs. And when you have someone like Trossard, who is hypothetically a very good finisher, I don't mind starting him. Like, I'm not avidly against it. That didn't piss me off or anything. Ironically, we gave a lot of shit to Arteta, and I think very rightfully so, after the City game, for his starting midfield. And I think that this was the game to have that kind of midfield.
I think that's what we all anticipated, that Mourinho would start to stiffen things up because we have to wrestle against the wrestlers. But there's also an argument, if you recall, the last time we won before today at Newcastle was the Jorginho game, where we basically just out-technique them. So it was like, why don't we just do what we do? So when I noticed that there was no Mourinho in the starting lineup, I was pretty pleased about that. But since I'm the biggest Mourinho booster on the planet, I wasn't trying to have a conversation with nobody. But let's talk Mosquera real quick, since we're still on the lineup. Gabby, what? Is this just us protecting our newly resigned asset in Saliba that much?
I think it was. If Saliba's fully fit, there's no way he doesn't start this game. If we're being honest, I don't think he does not start this game at all. But the problem is, he goes out and he says, not Saliba, but Mikel goes out and he says, well, we're protecting him because he has a niggling ankle injury. And I'm like, he's on the bench, has an ankle injury. I mean, like, not enough to start him, but enough for him to come in the second half. I don't know if I trust that, but hey.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that when we get to halftime as well, because I am confused by that substitution. I'm not mad at it. I'm just confused that it happened. I'm confused that he didn't start. I'm confused that he played. But I'm really happy. Or as Coach put it, because he bought a thesaurus over the summer break, he's elated. He's elated now. But Coach, when you saw the lineup, where did you anticipate Eze playing? I knew, based on the fact that Trossard was starting, that he wasn't going to be the left winger. We knew that part. But did you think it was going to be more of a floating 10 up top of double pivot? Or was it more like he's just replacing Odegaard straight up, which is, I think, what we saw?
Do you know what's really strange? I think the context changed as the game evolved. I think we actually started off in a double pivot. And then the more the game progressed, especially like in the first 30 to 35 minutes, there was gaps where he could just pop up everywhere. So he was just like, well, let's make it a midfield three, because if I go here, Dekkers, I need you to go here. Or Martin, I need you to go here, basically. So I think it's a way to Newcastle, like, you know, no respect to them, but unfortunately we have to admit that at home that, you know, they'll give you a tough time. Playing a double pivot, there's nothing wrong with that. So, but I just think we realize that, hold on a second, we're much better than these lot. We can get away with a single pivot here. Get a bit higher and I can actually pop up in more places rather than being the only creative guy in the final line, basically. Do you know what I mean? I think we saw both in the first half, you know?
Okay, well, the game started and the first memorable moment for me, and this is pathetic, but it's Newcastle, was Joel Linton kicking the shit out of Saka. Gabby, I know you've already lost your voice a bit, but is that where it started? Did you yell at your TV screen?
Literally, I hadn't even come down to turn like on the TV yet. Like literally, I was doing something else. I came in, and I was like, "What the fuck is going on?" Oh, I seen the timeline say it's the first minute of the game. Like, are we surprised? Like, are we fucking surprised? We're not. We're not surprised.
Man, like. I'm not saying he should have been booked for it, but it was just so unnecessarily violent. You can foul a fellow professional without trying to decapitate them, but you know, whatever. In any event, the free kick that resulted from that led to Gyökeres getting a shot, not on goal, but he got a shot from the free kick that Rice. He may have been offside there. The next notable moment was Eze forcing a really good save from Pope. A nice shot from, was it outside the box, Mitch? Or just right inside
the box? Right inside the box.
Right inside the box. Do you think Eze should do better there, or was it just a great save?
No, it was a great save.
Great save. Fair enough. Then, Coach, I guess this is a good point to talk about Eze, because this, I wouldn't say this was a bad game by any means. I thought he was fantastic today. But we've talked about the positioning. He was at one point, initially he was just a sole 10. Then he was the right eight, if you will. Then he got on the end of a lot of stuff. It seems he may have reminded you of someone you want to talk about. Proceed.
Yeah, I mean, if we're being honest, like, especially in the latter years of KDB's City career, I mean specifically the 21-22 version and 22-23 version, where he essentially was the 10 behind the striker on his own, or even like the second striker, if you like. And that comes with a lot of responsibility of not only creating chances, but actually putting away chances yourself, or even like having chances for yourself. And I saw a lot today that reminded me of that 22-23 version of KDB, where he was popping up, getting chances himself and creating for others as well. And he would, Eze's interpretation of that role is mirrored it a lot, to be honest, because you think of it like this. If Gyökeres isn't shooting, who are you deferring to next through the middle of the pitch to shoot? It would be Eze, right? And that's exactly what it was with City. It was, if Haaland's not getting these chances, it has to be KDB. And I think Arteta's realised that, boy, this guy can finish. Like, he can really, really finish. Like, I'll give an example of a game that I watched at Selhurst Park a couple years ago. And I think by then they'd realised that, oh, Eze's probably our best chance winning this game. So he just stayed a lot higher. And every time the ball came to him, he was right or left foot, he was just letting it off because he's got that quality. And I think Arteta's realised pretty quickly that, yeah, these left side shifts will happen, but it's probably more bet for the benefit of the team and him if he gets more shots centrally. So I don't know what that means to the rest of our midfield, but yeah, I think we found our second difference maker through the center of the pitch in Eze, I think, for sure.
That's encouraging. I can't wait for Arteta to yell at him to come back to the touchline soon. Can't wait for that. speaking of shooters, Mitch, Gyökeres, I'm just going to spoil the lead here. I feel like he didn't score, but he had a great game. Like, considering who we were playing against, considering the atmosphere, considering the fact that he's played a number of games, like big away games for us, where he hasn't even gotten a shot in the game, I thought he was very active today. Do you concur with that assessment, or do you think he didn't quite meet the standards? Well, I'm not sure that he meet the standards we want him to meet, but what do you think?
Mixed on Gyökeres today, because I was kind of seeing, I've been seeing some differing opinions today on just like what people thought about his performance. I've had people tell me that they thought that Marino should start next to him at striker. I've seen people say that they thought Gyökeres had a great performance today. I think I'm a little bit more in the middle. There's things that he does that really frustrate me. Of like, there was a chance in the first half where like he gets the ball with space ahead of him and he just doesn't accelerate fast enough and gets caught up to pretty quickly. And that's been a little bit worrying because I know he's fast, but he doesn't accelerate very fast. And I think that Premier League defenders are really, really good accelerators. And so I think he's just kind of got to get more matched up to pace of play there, of just like getting to the ball quicker and getting on the ball quicker. And so I think that this is a deeply, deeply physical game. There was times where he's getting his face grabbed. He didn't get a single call going his way. Like, it was a tough, tough go for him. But like, I think like in my head, I was like, I miss Kai Havertz because this was a game where having someone who's going to actually win a header in the final third, when we're just trying to flip the field and win a second ball, would have been very effective. And it was frustrating to me that Gyökeres wasn't doing that. That being said, I liked his channel running a lot. I liked what he was trying to do. I just think that like there was a couple moments where I wanted him to get a shot off just a little bit quicker or get to the ball a little bit quicker to create a better chance for himself, because I don't feel like there was anything out of his performance that I absolutely loved, but I don't think it was a bad performance by any means.
Oh, Gabby, what are you thinking?
I mean, for me, it was a mixed bag, but it was more good than bad, if that makes sense. I give any performance at St. James Park an asterisk, because it's like Old Trafford. This is a demon stadium. Whatever you give me in the stadium, as long as you ain't kicking the ball into your own net, that's fair. that's what I got. Especially with the way that, like you said, the way that they were following him. That replay of, I don't even remember who it was, putting his hand over Gyökeres' face and pulling him down.
He was trying to do celebration for him. That's what he was trying to do.
What am I watching? Like, it gave me PTSD from like Charlie Adam and like Alexis, where he was choking him to death. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Honestly, one of these days on the pod, we should make a ranking of all the worst, like, non-injurious challenges we've witnessed. I'm taking dibs on Mosquera from Wolves putting his finger up someone's booty-o. Like, that was crazy. Like,
was crazy. Yo, for me, top two is... listen, top two for me is them stomping on Tomiyasu's face. Like, that was just crazy. Oh, I'm sorry.
The shoulder to the back of Jorginho's neck a couple years ago, that was fucking horrible.
You know, can we just pause on that for a second? Do you know Gabriel gave that to Waltermade, the exact same sort of treatment to Waltermade? Not as bad.
Yeah.
But he didn't get booked.
So they're doing the calling him a thug on Sky Sports. You know why?
Do you know what's great? I think that probably lets us know that at St. James Park, violence isn't actually punished. So maybe we should lean into that next season. Maybe
they play football over there.
Yeah. Maybe we should actually go a little bit harder next year, seeing as nobody's getting booked for this shit. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, we've seen Abu Dhabi pick up red cards there. We've seen Kai Havertz have the whole stadium on his head for a regular tackle that Arsenal fans got gaslit into agreeing that it was a reckless tackle because, I don't know.
Are you Arsenal fans who agree with that? You niggas are soft.
That was a great tackle. And I think it was like the moment Kai became like, oh, I fucking love
that. Yeah. That was the game.
Almost single-handedly won us the league.
There was a series of Newcastle corners that was the result of a non-call. Ultimate was clearly offside. He ends up winning a corner based on being offside. They don't call it. And Newcastle get three straight corners, one of which resulted in a shot on goal from Malik Thiel, a great header. Malik Thiel, by the way, he impressed me today. And it's interesting because I watch quite a bit of Serie A because I record podcasts. And I watched him at Milan last year, and that boy was ass. Today he looked incredible. Like, I was really impressed with him.
The thing is, I know he's a good player. I just know he sucks in Italy, but that's why he's on my bench in my fantasy team. Because, like, do you know what? We could probably, like, he'll probably end up displacing one of those dickheads at Newcastle because I think he's better than at least one of those centre backs. To be fair, sure. But yeah, he was good today. I think he handled Gyökeres really, really well. if I'm just being honest, despite Gyökeres having a decent game, but yeah, he had never acted like this before in his life. Like, he was not like this in Italy at all.
I think on Gyökeres, I'm sure we'll talk about him again as we go through the pod, but I just want to make the point before I forget that for me, maybe I'm grading him on a low curve at the moment, but the fact that I can recall, like, yes, he didn't get those shots off quickly enough, but the fact that I can recall him getting in shooting position and shooting somewhere around like 4 to 7 times a day, I'm like, he's going to be all right.
Yeah.
He's going to be all right. I just need him to like drop like 5 pounds and he'll be okay.
This is terrible to say, and I'm not comparing the two players. But if for anybody American is listening to this pod, he reminds me of Jordan Morris when he's running so badly. And that is terrible to say, but he's so top heavy.
Right.
Like,
right.
He moves like an artillery tank.
When I called him fat, Dean abused me and my lineage when I called him fat. But now you see it.
Yeah? I still haven't called him fat. I don't agree with you. I'm not calling him fat. Like,
but
I'm
just... by footballing standards, obviously he's not fat. You can call me a professional footballer. But I mean in the sense that if you've got a, like, if it's noticeable to us, then by footballing standards, he's on the heavy side. Do you know what I mean? So...
Yeah, he does look a little sluggish lately, but I'm sure that will pass. Because, I mean, we've seen him. We saw him in the Champions League. It's not as if we just have highlights of him from the Portuguese league. So I'm not too worried about him. We'll give it till like, I want to say like the end of November. Then if he still looks exactly like this, then I might be like, Berta, you bought a dud. Let's go get a KTK from Liverpool. Since the big teams are just buying players from each other now, apparently, according to Liverpool fans, dickheads. By the way, before I move on, I'd like to make a general speech on Liverpool fans. You motherfuckers are annoying as shit. You're so insecure and y'all suck. Okay? Like, let Arsenal fans just watch their games in peace without you motherfuckers interrupting. Like, it was an Arsenal versus Newcastle game. The fact that Jared Gillett is a Liverpool fan that does not referee Liverpool games but referees Arsenal games is a fact. Okay? I didn't make that up. Okay? I said it. I put it out there, and you motherfuckers turned it into this whole Badu. But in any event, you're not going to hear this because you're all morons, and I blocked all of you anyway, so we will never speak again. So you can all eat my dick from the back with hot sauce. Actually, not with hot sauce because that should be stinging if it hits your urethra. But you know what I mean. Fuck y'all. In any event, don't mind my rant. Let's talk about the moment of the game. Even though a lot of good things happened later on, this was objectively a bad thing because Newcastle, there's some broken play. Newcastle gained possession of the ball. One of their defenders, it might have been Malik Thiaw, who we just complimented, passes the ball backwards to Nick Pope, but he doesn't see Victor Gyökeres in his blind side. Gyökeres gets onto the ball, taps it around Pope, gets upended. Penalty. Seemed pretty obvious. Next thing we know, there's a VAR check involved. And long story short, Nick Pope got a touch on the ball, and somehow that justifies taking the player out. I know I haven't asked a question yet, and I know I have said that with a certain tone, so clearly everyone knows how I feel. But we'll go to Mitch. What the fuck, bro? Like, I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm used to this, but that felt very pointed.
Yeah. I think it was a stonewall penalty. I think Saka put it really well after the game when they interviewed him on NBC. He said, when the VAR check takes that long, it's clear. It's obvious that it's not a clear and obvious error. Therefore, it shouldn't have been overturned. And that is very, very well said. And he'll probably get fined for it. And that's crazy. I think my biggest frustration with VAR, because it's something that like could be so good, is the fact that they go into a VAR check of how can we make sure that the call on the field is reversed, as opposed to, is there anything explicitly wrong with what happened? And if you're going at it with how can we find a way to overturn, you're going to look as explicitly as possible of like, ooh, I think Nick Pope's foot barely gets touched on this ball. And that means he didn't take Victor Gyökeres out. Yes, it does. Whether he got a touch on the ball does not fucking matter. He took Victor Gyökeres out. Gyökeres takes the touch. The ball goes away from him. The fact that Nick Pope flails his leg out and gets a touch on the ball doesn't make any fucking effect. The fact that he threw his leg out and it got Victor Gyökeres entirely. Like, Gyökeres didn't embellish. He just got fucking wiped out. It's a stonewall penalty. And it's only going to be overturned if you are going in with the explicit look of how can I overturn this, which is explicitly doing VAR the wrong way. It's just a technology that is being grappled with the worst and least supportive hands imaginable. Like, they don't understand how to use this and like even make their colleagues on the pitch decisions look good. That's a stonewall penalty in real time, and you have to look at it for 5 fucking minutes to realize that it's something you need to overturn. That's bad, and you did it wrong.
I literally don't have he went over everything that I was gonna say, but honestly, let me just say this. If anybody was watching the American broadcast on NBC, I mean on USA, Tim Howard, if I ever fucking catch you, You doing this, oh, I used to be a goalkeeper, so, you know, I have to go with the goalkeeper. Shut the fuck up. You're an idiot. That was ridiculous. He upends the player, and it is a pen. And the referee called it in real time. And then some moron went in his ear and said, I think you should take a look at the monitor, because I don't think that's right. You're a fucking neek. Isn't that what English people say? You're a neek. You're a moron. You're a nerd. Shut up.
You're right. You're right. It's
neat. Stop re-refereeing the game. If you're going to trust these morons to referee these big games, then actually trust these morons to referee these big games. You telling another referee that, hey, even though you saw it in real time and you made the split decision on the field, I'm going to tell you that you're wrong, even though he wasn't, and tell you to go look at the monitor. And if you look hard enough, you'll see that I'm right. Fucking idiot.
Yeah, coach, I'm not sure you can top that, but you can try.
I'm not going to be honest. I just think all referees should basically...
We need them for the game, coach. Stop it. How are we going to play the games with no refs if you want to alligator Alcatraz? You do this every year. That's why I got to
canon. I'm going to say all refs should have a one-game contract. That's what I think they should have. And if you fuck up, then I'm sorry. You're going to have to reapply for your job. And just have a gang of refs just waiting. They don't have to be good because these ones aren't good. Anybody sign up to be a ref and just have everybody on a one game contract. If you're good, you get a game next week. If not, you get fucked off or you get put to the back of the line, basically.
That's not terrible.
Listen, you could Jeopardy. Do it the way I say it.
We play with Jeopardy, right? So they need to actually referee with Jeopardy as well, because they know that if they fuck up, it's fine. I'll just get a great game next week anyway.
Yeah, I mean, or you do what UEFA does it and go get a pool of referees from other countries. You can't referee in your own country. Since you want to be a bullshit, send one of those English referees to the Bernabeu, to the Metropolitano, send one of the in those cauldrons, and then you make a wrong decision over there.
No. They just send them to Turkey. Send them to Turkey and send them to Greece.
I was going to say, send them to Turkey.
because the chairman in Turkey and Greece, they walk around with pistols on their hips.
Real things on them. Like,
thing on them.
So I dare you to make a wrong decision. Like, I actually need them to lock in and actually referee like it means something, because it does. And they're not reffing the game like it does. They're like, oh yeah, it's fine. Bro, people's livelihoods are on the line. Like, you know, Dean almost killed someone today, guys. Like, like come on.
Bro, I was so mad, because it's like, I think the frustrating part about these decisions is that we're all like, as this is an Arsenal podcast at the moment, but we're all fans of football in general. When you see something that bad, just because two morons or four morons or however many morons it took to screw in the light bulb to not allow that penalty said it wasn't a penalty, doesn't mean that, oh, we're going to use this as a source of banter now. Like, fuck Arsenal. We're going to go with the decision as they did. It's like, it's a patently on its face ridiculous call. It was a clear penalty. It didn't need to be complex. It's not controversial enough to talk. Like, it was so obviously a penalty. Like, it's not even one of those ones where the guy kicks it away from goal entirely. Then the keeper fouls him and you're like, well, he wasn't even going to goal anymore. Like, Yarkeres would have still had that under control if he didn't get upended. So I don't understand why people are saying, well, the goalkeeper touched it. So what? Lots of people get touched and fucking tackled to death and it's a foul. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, it's ridiculous. I don't know.
I suppose one more thing here is the fact that there's Gary Neville on comms even saying that's a pen. Like, even after the review, he's like, he still feels like it's a pen. Like, guys, don't let Gary Neville ever be right. That's the one. In fact, how about this? If you're referees, just watch how Gary Neville interprets the game and do the opposite of that. Then you'll be fine, basically. The fact that Gary Neville said that it's a pen, I'm like, yeah, you guys have horrible. Because he's paid to obviously make sure that, you know, the PGM or whatever else are seen in a good light, but he can't even defend that bullshit. You know? So,
All I gotta say is we all need to start acting like Marianakis, and that's it. Like, we all need to start acting like Marianakis. Like, I'm so sorry, but like I say all the time, none of these fans are paying money for these absorbent fucking Sky packages and NBC packages and all these damn streaming services to watch these games or pay for butts in seats to watch referees fuck up games like this. We're not paying to see you. Like, wrap it up.
Like, Graham Lasso, who is really annoying, you know, but
I muted my TV today because he was pissing me off.
I speak Spanish now because I was watching Telemundo. But that motherfucker, like, he has such short man energy. He was the same way as a player. He's so fucking annoying. Like, he took every possible position on that penalty call throughout the time it took them to come to the wrong decision. Then I'm not even sure where he ended up because he took so many different sides. Like, it was ridiculous, you know. But yeah, at that point, I thought to myself, well, shit, at least we're playing well, because shortly after that, 10 minutes later, there was a really nice flowing move that went from right to left that ended with Trossard hitting the post. He probably should have scored there. I would have put a lot of money on him scoring there, but, you know, Trossard does these things sometimes. A few minutes later, Eze had another shot saved by Pope. A few minutes after that, Saka had a shot saved by... So I'm thinking to myself, we're playing really well. And by the 30th minute, I was like, I think this is the best Arsenal has looked this entire season. Coach, am I over-egging the pudding here, or did we look that good?
No, you're right. I think one of the key components here is that we looked fitter than them, and we were I wouldn't even say hot, we were like a whole yard sharper than them, like genuinely. Newcastle games are physical, especially in midfield, and I was waiting for their midfield to actually make it a battle, and they never got into it. Like we dominated them with the ball, without the ball. We actually dominated them. The only places where they were finding joy is with their centre-backs just, you know, climbing all over your careers and putting them on the floor. But everywhere else in midfield, we dominated them. And I think at Newcastle, same way that Barcelona did it, if you can, despite Barcelona having, you know, some shaky periods and Newcastle actually looking quite well, Barcelona are miles ahead of them in terms of ability in midfield. And I think so are we, to be honest. If we're able to just control that part of the pitch, they ain't got enough up front anymore with no Isak, and they've got a bunch of bumbling oafs at centre-back as well. We will make shit happen, and we did make shit happen. We were finding gaps and finding spaces that they were very, very uncomfortable with. We were making them turn and face their own goal. We were getting them isolated in 1v1s. We were running behind their midfield as well. And most importantly, we were actually getting shots off. That was the key thing for momentum. I think probably later on we'll probably have to talk about that a little bit more. But we were getting real, real momentum from the fact that we weren't waiting for the perfect chance. I think Gabby has mentioned something like this before, where it's like you don't always have to just wait for the perfect goal. The more you shoot, the more momentum you get, the more, you know, you put the fear of God into these teams, because they're like, well, every time they get the ball in our half, our goalkeeper's got to do something, basically. And that, you know, pushes teams back a bit. That means you get more areas to play, and that means your better players can actually affect the games in the more dangerous area, kind of, just by shooting more when it's not always convenient. I think there was a chance in, we'll probably get in the second half, where Saka shot from a relatively weird angle, but then it's dropped to Gyökeres, but his touch wasn't bad. But again, you know, we're actually making shit shake. So yeah, I think that was one of the key things, that our midfield just dominating them and pushing them back, and then actually shooting when we get close enough to goal.
Fair enough. Well said, Coach. Mitch, right before Newcastle ended up scoring, which we're unfortunately going to have to talk about in a moment here, Mosquera tried to play a back pass to the goalkeeper, and it ends up going out for the corner that led to the goal. I suppose on its face, it's an error, but I thought otherwise he was fantastic, wasn't he?
Yeah, I other than that, I really didn't have any issues with Mosquera's performance. I think there was a couple of moments where he looked a little bit more nervy than we've seen him before, but that was just a mishit. It just happened to lead to a goal. In fact, I think the other center back is more at blame for the goal than Mosquera is.
Not too much.
But we will get to that.
Yeah, and we are officially there, because from the resulting corner, Voltimata was just really free in the box, and he nods it in. And I'm thinking to myself, like, well, there was an Arsenal player right in front of him who was then eating grass as the ball was going in the net. Like, surely there's a foul there, but there wasn't a foul. Gabby, I'll stipulate right now that, yes, that was probably a soft-ish push on Gabriel, and he should do better there. But this is your guy. What went wrong there? Why y'all not jumping?
I mean, you're trying to stop him to blow, but I wasn't even going to stop him to blow when I got on this pod. If not for the end of this game... Gabriel, you would have got roasted. That was just poor. That was just so poor. I know that you could say, oh, well, Mosquera shouldn't have given the corner for that. You still have a corner to defend. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You are calling for a foul. And don't get me wrong, he does put his hands on him, but that's soft. That's soft. It's not like it was a couple seasons ago when Joelinton put like two hand pushed you down to the ground. That it was something completely different than what happened in this game. You were just looking for a foul while that guy wanted to get the ball. It's as simple as that. I don't know what, how else to say it. You should have defended your man. Jump in the air. Put your body on him and jump in the air. Nobody wants to fight with Gabriel. Like, nobody wants to fight with Gabriel. That guy is a psycho.
Yeah. I still feel as if there was enough contact for him to not win the challenge. Then maybe he exaggerated it as he was going down. That said, Mitch, after the goal went in, what did you make of Arsenal's response to the goal? I felt like it was a little jagged.
Yeah, I think we were fucking rattled and played like absolute fucking dog shit for the rest of the half. Luckily, we came out of halftime looking a little bit more calm and assured, but it was just like we just let the emotions get to us and we're just like forgot how to play the fucking sport for 15 minutes. It was super cool and awesome. I was so mad. Like, I had to take a walk at halftime, had to like just full like listen to some Olivia Dean to calm me down because I was just fucking pissed with how we looked. We were just so fucking bad.
Oh, man, I am learning so much about white people today. Coach, I felt as if, again, as we've all mostly agreed on the pod so far, we were playing really well in that first half. So I didn't really feel a need to change much, but I did think to myself, like, the one thing we wanted to avoid today was having Newcastle score first because they're just going to go into that fucking block and it's going to be hard to break down. And based on the jagged rest of the half that Mitch mentioned, I was like, this is not looking good, bruv. What were you thinking of from a changes standpoint? And while you're answering that, I would like to also speak on the Mosquera-Saliba thing. I'm still a little confused at what happened.
Yeah, I mean, when you play that well and then you go a goal down, but then you've already had to deal with a Stonewall penalty not being given kind of thing, I can kind of forgive the players for not letting their heads go down, but just, you know, letting the tempo a little bit slip a little bit, you know? Like, it's hard to take, like... You know, as much as we say, like, they're paid a lot, you know, like, they should be able to just shake these things off. You've got to give people room to process shit. Not just in football, in life in general. Like, let them process it, but obviously remain professional. We didn't.
Mitch took a walk.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff I can't talk about in public.
Yeah. So, I mean, the players, that, like, I don't recall us conceding another chance for the rest of the half. It's just that when we got the ball, we couldn't really do shit with it basically after they scored. It was just, and I get it, like it's really fucking frustrating, but I love this team because our out of possession shape is still really, really fucking good. So at a base level, we're always going to be fine in that regard. We're never ever going to just, you know, let one goal go in and then it's floodgates open kind of thing. We're going to steady the ship, but going forward, it's going to obviously rattle you. Do you know what I mean? So I sympathize with them in that regard, but the Mosquera thing, I don't have an answer for that. I'm trying to understand what the thought process was. I mean, if there was one thing I think Arteta was thinking, he's probably thinking that if we draw them into us more, because they're going to want to obviously go into their block, but when we have it in our half, they're going to press us. They don't know how else to play, basically without the ball. Saliba's really good at baiting the press and then carrying out with it and also finding somebody else in midfield. So I think Mosquera has been great. He was our primary distributor, I think, Nottingham Forest, but William Saliba is like arguably the best in the world at doing that shit. So if you can gain another playmaker deeper, why not? And he's not a bad defender. So I think that was probably looking at solutions wise, how do we create more gaps higher up the pitch from Newcastle so that we can have our difference makers have one less player to deal with? Because I noticed Anthony Gordon was out of position a lot this game. He was running back like a maniac trying to get back at Saka. And a lot of the time, by the time he gets back, the ball is gone and we're in again, basically. So I think having Saliba on the pitch helps to increase that problem, basically, for Newcastle.
Okay. Well, go on, Mitch.
I just wanted to talk real quick about just like us going into the half losing, because they said this on the broadcast during the City game and it fucking shocked me and it's just like stuck with me since the last time, I guess before today, that we went into halftime losing and won
that.
Was the Reece Nelson game against Bournemouth in 2023.
Yeah.
That's fucking insane. and really bad. So when we went into the half losing, I was like, well, we're fucked. We're not going to win this game. We just don't have that dog in us for whatever reason. We don't have this comeback gene that Liverpool seemed to thrive in. Like a 1-0 lead shouldn't feel insurmountable for a team this talented. And yet, at least for me at the time at halftime and leading up to it, it did. It felt like it was an insurmountable deficit, and we were only down by one goal. And that's just not a good place for us to be in. I'm so fucking glad that we've like been able to come back and win this game, but I was so distraught because I was worried about like where we are if we can't come back from a 1-0 game kind of thing. Like if we concede first and we can't win a game, then what the fuck are we doing? So I was very concerned going into the half. I think that's why more than anything, I feel relief about this result and not joy. Like that's why I was at the top of the show. I'm jealous of Coach and Gabby being like so joyful about this win because I want to be in that place. Mitch, but when Gabrielle scored, I just felt relief.
So it's okay there, Mitch, but it's the joy doesn't come from just finding, it's hate, bro. It's hate.
Yeah, it's a hate in our hearts. What do you mean?
Oh, trust me. I fucking hate these motherfuckers. I hate playing at St. James's Park. It's not a good atmosphere. They're just angry and loud about it. That's not like, they're not a good crowd that you're like, oh, what a wonderful atmosphere. They're just mad all the time.
Did anybody else notice as well that they weren't actually that raucous today? Like, I literally
because they were getting fucking slapped.
Beating the shit out of them. Like,
well, I'm talking early in the game. Like, the biggest cheer they got was Joe Linton trying to assault Saka. That was it. But they were quiet as fuck this game.
They know it's never been more over for them.
Just for the record, I will always harp on this. I resent all these stadiums where they put the away fans in the fucking sky and you can't see them at all on TV. I hate that so much. It's bullshit. Like when the Liverpool boy, Rio, scored against them to beat them a couple weeks ago, when he went to celebrate, he had to look around to find people to rejoice with because everyone around him within his eyesight is a Newcastle fan. It's ridiculous. Like it's so unfair that at some stadiums, the away fans have to sit in the sky. Meanwhile, at the Emirates, I can literally see these assholes celebrating before the ball goes in our net sometimes.
At Tottenham's too as well, actually. We've had a good time with Gabriel and the rest of them just celebrating in front of our Arsenal fans. It's been quite wonderful, I can't lie.
Every stadium should have a spot where we can see the away fans on TV. That's all I'm saying. Maybe not all of them need to sit in the same section, but just come on, man. Like, this is not too much to ask for, man. Fuck Newcastle. Anyway, second half starts. First highlight I recall was maybe about 9-10 minutes in. Trossard passes a nice ball to Eze, volleys it over the bar. Then there was a really good chance 5 minutes after that where there was some combination play through Newcastle's block. So for those of you that are always complaining about central progression and all that shit, shut the fuck up. It's hard to do, but we did it really well in this moment because between Zubimendi, Eze, I don't even know. I just know that it ended with Zubimendi chipping the ball over the defense and Timber getting a really good header in and Nick Pope had a really good game, by the way. I'll give him props for that. He made a lot of really good saves, not just
Nick Pope.
And then he did a lot of shout out to him. Shit late in the game. It was awesome.
Well, we'll get there. Great save. Coach, you made a note on the agenda. I don't know how to parlay this into a question, so you better start talking before I go to somebody else.
No, I'm just saying, you mentioned the verticality. Like, there was... Yeah,
central progression.
Yeah, so...
See, I know words too, motherfucker.
I think the Zubimendi signing, and I need everyone just to be excited as I am because I still am. I think the Zubimendi signing is so good and so clutch and so, and again, it's another message. We beat Real Madrid to his signature. We absolutely beat the living dog shit out of Liverpool to his signature. Who else was interested? Was City interested as well? Yeah.
Everybody wanted Zubimendi, man.
Yeah, but Barcelona. But Barcelona, Real Madrid and Liverpool really wanted him, right? And the fact that he chose us, again, it's another message that shit is happening at Arsenal, you know. Hide your trophies, hide your medals, basically. But him being able to build a relationship with pretty much anyone that's standing in front of him, it's making me want to cry happy tears, guys. Like, it's been such a long time since we've been able to have that sort of midfielder that can just, he doesn't need much. He just needs to be able to look, get his head up and he'll make something happen. The ball to Timber itself, I think, is just Zubimendi probably operating at 105% at this point. It was first time scoop to the outside of his foot into a big chance. Like, it's a very, very difficult pass, guys. And this is him playing 30, 35 yards away from the opposition goal. Like, this is not what we bought him for. Or maybe it is, I don't know. But in my mind, I didn't have him making those sorts of passes. But again, you know, a few weeks ago, I made the point of all three of our midfielders, regardless of who we put out, can do shit in all three phases of the game. That's very hard to stop. That's very, very hard to stop. Think of it like this. We have our number 10s in Eze and Ranieri and Odegaard. So teams like, oh yeah, we'll just mark him. But then Zubimendi can play that sort of pass as well. Rice can can put a ball in the box that will make you want to cry because of the amount of whip and pace on it. So there's a lot of creative options there that don't look traditionally creative, if that makes sense. And that only means one thing. If we're following the ball out wide kind of thing, teams will be like, oh yeah, Saka's there. We can stop Saka. And it's like, well, okay, Zubimendi just punch it through the lines to Eze or create a chance himself. How else do you stop that? Like, we've equipped ourselves with so many weapons now that, for me, it's hard to see us not going on a long run this season, which may end in a trophy or not. But I think there's too many options there for us in midfield, at least. So,
yeah, well said, well said. Coach has just glazed Zubimendi for about an appropriate amount of time, I would say. So, Gabby, it's up to you to do the same for his partner, Declan Rice, who I thought was magnificent today, especially in the second half when he sort of dropped into that sort of left back space and Calafiori stayed out wide for the most part. But Declan Rice was just everywhere today, Gabby.
He was. And that's his job for us. He's just everywhere. I mean, that guy covers grass like a fucking lawnmower. I don't know. Like, he, for me, like, I can't really say what I was particularly watching him on the ball, but at least in transitions, which we had a few, that later on in the game transition where he gets back and he's behind the player. I can't even remember who it was.
I think it was Murphy.
Murphy behind the, like, he was behind him and he catches up to him in his own box and actually gets the tackle and so he can get it out for a corner. Declan Rice, I felt safe.
That is,
I felt safe. He just it reminds me of I know we make fun of it all the time, but it reminds me of that that game at Anfield that we had like last season, was it?
Yeah.
Where he's just like, there's four people running at me. I'll just look at everyone and hopefully they stop and say, I can't get past Declan Rice. And he was right. Like, he just keeps the midfield ticking so well. Like, the only criticism, and this is a nitpicky thing, but the only criticism I had of him was that I wanted us, him and Zubimendi, to have more emphasis on the ball and play in between the lines, which I know a center progression is hard, but I wanted that specifically. I was like, I want to see some more of that. Everything else, hey, I can't ask for much more from you. You know what I'm saying?
All right, we're going to assume that we might have lost Gabby here, and we're going to transition over to our next point. The point being that we all love Declan Rice very much because he runs a lot and he does good, cool stuff, and he has muscles and stuff. He's great. Go England! Yay! Mitch, this really shouldn't be a talking point, but Saliba kind of jumped into the back of Livermento at one point. He wasn't going to win the challenge at any point. And the kid landed a little funny, gets stretchered off. Actually, I don't even know why I mentioned her name. I just wanted to talk about that. I just felt it was... it just seemed very uncharacteristic of an Arsenal player, I feel like. Like, we just don't do shit like that, you know. And I think maybe the tenor of the game, the frustration of the game, the time-wasting we're dealing with, the ref being a bit of an asshole, Saliba got a little mad and he was like, fuck it, I'm going to jump on somebody, you know. And unfortunately, Livramento got hurt. And he looked good, man.
I didn't really see that as anything like that Saliba did wrong. Like,
right.
He didn't get booked
or anything like
that. Yeah, same. I just saw it of like he like went up for a ball and then Livramento came down wrong. And he's already torn his ACL in his career. I hope for his sake that he doesn't, it's not again, because you know better than anyone, Dean, that doing that twice is not fun.
No.
I saw some people pissed off that he was like wasting time. I'm like, I think he's real fucking hurt. I don't know.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, get this motherfucker off the pitch. Sick of your shit. Like,
sick of your shit. I'll stay with you, Mitch. we're on the, I want to say the 65th, 70th minute at that point. We'd already made a couple subs. Well, not a couple subs, but we'd made at least the one, the Mosquera Saliba sub. What were you looking for? Because we still hadn't scored, even though we're still looking good, looking better. What was Pib wanting us to do at that point?
Throw the fucking kitchen sink at them. Just put on every attacker we have. And I was kind of happy with the subs we made. I mean, obviously I was happy because we won the game. But like at the time, I was just like, I don't know about taking Calafiore off. It seems interesting. And then we ended up taking Saka off. And it was like, that was some interesting choices. I do want to, like, I know Saka's coming back from an injury still. But like, I want Saka to be someone we do not take off in this kind of situation. So I was like a little disappointed to see that he was one of the people that was subbed off. I don't think he did anything wrong or deserved to be subbed off. I think it's more load management than anything. But it's like, I want Saka to feel inevitable. I want him to reach that Salah level. And I think that this is a big season for him. And obviously he had the setback with the injury. But I'm really hoping that he can like manage to kind of like find some consistency. Bro, why? Why are you doing this? I'm sorry.
I think that's going to be on Saka himself. I'm not going to obviously we want our best players to be on the field during the most clutch moments of the game. But at the end of the day, his hamstrings are his hamstrings. And we bought a whole £52 million worth of winger to protect those hamstrings. So it is what it is. That said, Gabby, we removed Saka and Calafiore for Marino and Martinelli. Those are not exact, even within our very flexible squad, those aren't exact matches.
Yeah, they weren't plug and play.
Right. Did you like the aggression that Mikel was showing there?
Oh, or I was definitely like saying, listen, I wouldn't have taken Saka off, but I understand why he did. But Trossard should have came off earlier. He was pissing me off. I can't lie. I was like, Mikel, there's no way that I'm seeing Eddie Howe make subs before you. Wrap this shit up. Like, seriously, I was like, Trossard needs to come off. If Martinelli is one of your finishers, put him on now. Leave Saka on the other side and put Mikel Merino up there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're lumping balls into the box now. And you know Gyökeres is not going to get those headers. Put Merino in there.
That's fair. Coach, where do you stand on the subs? I mean, obviously we won the game, so it worked out in the end, but do you think he made the right choices?
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I was confused as fuck, man, because like, the hell are you taking off Saka for? But I understood the logic. Like, the moment we actually started putting even more pressure on them, I was like, oh, okay. Saka obviously can't continue the high intensity runs. They've lost Livermore as well. So Dan Burn, who's had to deal with Saka for, you know, the best part of 70 minutes or whatever it is, now has to deal with Martinelli for 20 minutes. That's not fun, regardless of what we think about Martinelli. Martinelli running in a straight line at you is hell. Like, he's a bundle of energy. So even if he hasn't got the ball, having to track his run, which is a lot more direct and a lot more... there's no frills with it. I'm just going to try and run into the space behind you. Whereas the Saka will stop you, then it'll go past you kind of thing. So he's had to change the whole ways he's been defending the entire game. So that's one part of it. With Marino, it's even more simpler than that. He's just another big body in the box who's going to cause havoc. They've had a great time with Gyökeres today. Okay, that's cool. We'll bring on our 6'2" guy who is fantastic in the air. Deal with him as well then. You know, you've had your fun with Gyökeres. Deal with this one as well kind of thing. And yeah, I liked it, to be honest. I just felt as well that Calafiore could have had a moment today where like his creativity could have unlocked something, because I thought like he was a little bit hesitant to kind of, you know, throw the ball in the box here or there kind of thing. So maybe Arteta sensed that as well and thought, you know what, if he's not going to do that, let me actually just get him off and actually just be a bit more direct. But yeah going back to the question.
Didn't Elanga come on that side too?
Yeah, he did. He did.
And Calafiore had been booked.
I think that's why.
That deserved the booking. It was a foul, but I don't think that deserved the booking. He had fouled. He held Livermore back at one point, and there was a lot of Arsenal cover right behind him. So it's not like something crazy happened there, but whatever. In any event, this is a moment where I don't want to do too much because I'm the host of the show. I shouldn't be talking as much as I do. I actually hate hearing my voice when I edit these pods. It's disgusting. Like, I know, listeners, I completely relate to you motherfuckers, man. I will shut up now. Well, first, Mitch, Captain Fantastic came on. It's been a long time since we saw that motherfucker. And I have to say, I know I've developed a bit of a reputation as the resident Odegaard hater because I'm not such a fan of breast milk unless I'm drinking it. However,
what is your problem?
Like, it's delicious. I'm sorry, it's nutritious.
Lock him up.
you should be in prison, dude. Fuck you.
Listen, it's not like, like running up on motherfuckers and just like latching onto a nipple. It's like
that's what it sounds like. That's crazy. Like.
We'll talk about that on the next episode of the pod. We don't have enough time here. However, I just want to say in his, it wasn't even a 20, it was, let's say, a 15-minute cameo plus the extra time on the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
This was maybe the best Odegaard I've seen. Obviously this season, easily this season. But in a minute, he was on it. Like there were the passes we wanted to see. There was one to Gyökeres with the outside of his boot. There was one to Miles Lewis. Oh, he was just really good, Mitch. I'm going to have to shut the fuck up and latch onto a nipple, huh?
Beg you to not. Yeah. I truly...
If it's not a nipple, I'm a man. I'm sorry. Like that's the only thing.
I think maybe he's a little scared that Eze is going to take his job. Yeah, it was great stuff from him. Got the assist on the goal because he took a corner, so we didn't have to see a dumbass fucking outswinging ball on a corner from over there. Because there was a point in between Saka getting subbed off and Odegaard coming on that we didn't have someone who was ready to take those corners. And we saw one of those dumbass fucking outswinging corners from Declan Rice. So I'm glad that we at least brought on someone who could do that. It was very, very nice performance from him. It was great to see him at full flow because it feels like it's been ages since we've seen something like that from Odegaard. Very encouraging performance. Hopefully he continues to build on that.
Listen, man, Odegaard Hive, we back up. We back up.
We're back.
Because he was floating around the pitch like nothing. He did the one thing that I was actually asking Zubimendi and Declan Rice to do a little bit more, which is not really in their wheel bag, but is incisive passing. I want you to be a little bit more vertical. Play in 2 feet in the pockets. That ball to Miles Lewis-Skelly was sensational. It reminded me of the ball against Porto, where Trossard scored. That's exactly what it reminded me of. And when you have players that can do things like that, and Eze can do things like that, when you have those players on the pitch, people make those runs. They aren't as fucking stagnant because they know you can find them. It's what we used to say about Ozil all the time.
I never spoke about Ozil. Don't know who that is. Coach, real quick before we move on from the captain.
No, nah, fuck that. How can you disrespect Ozil like that?
Can I ask the question? What's wrong with Ozil?
Go on.
Apparently he's a Turkish nationalist now. We got to be careful. We live in America, okay? Like, just be easy. That said, was there from a, I know when you're chasing the game, you just want to put on as many talented players as possible, but did you get the sense that him and Eze were kind of redundant, maybe?
No.
Really.
No. Okay. So here's my thinking behind the sub. Are you finished?
Well, I just want to make the point that as the host, it's my job to start conversations. Don't jump on me, okay? I'm trying to make you think and say
cool.
Is it
a little bit redundant? Okay. Nigga, no.
Don't bully me.
I saw it like this. I saw it as when he took off Zubimendi, I was like, oh, okay, so Rice is the single six, if you can call it that, because he's not even playing six at this point. He's just playing because Newcastle are sunk so far into their own half. But I saw a slight potential evolution where it looked at times like he was part of a double pivot with Rice and Eze was still floating, basically. But that obviously wasn't the case because he was still getting forward anyway. When Eze and Odegaard strike up a proper relationship, I absolutely do see Eze being the more decisive one out of the two. That doesn't mean Odegaard can't do the
thing. You almost said Ozil, didn't you?
That's honestly one of my favorite players ever, man. I'm sorry.
If you combine Eze and Odegaard into one person, maybe you get Ozil.
You might get half of Ozil. But I think there's no reason why Odegaard can't do the same things where he's popping shots from outside the box and he's, you know, making some really cool passes and shit. But in this game, I think the game required his cooler head and his actual composure, being the captain, to be like, okay, I see gaps here. You guys do your thing. If it gets recycled, I'm just going to give it to you guys again because I can do that. I can do it from here, kind of thing. And it's a lot more of a simpler job, more responsibility, don't get me wrong, but it's a simpler job for the likes of Eze and whoever else we had up front to take a touch, get at the feet and hit at a goal or hit a crossing, kind of thing. There's a lot more measured and a lot more sort of know-how, I think, required to get the ball to them. And Odegaard is a master of that. you know, we talked about the pass to Miles Lewis-Skelly. That pass there was pretty much the Ozil pass to Bellerin for the Aubameyang goal against Leicester. It was the exact same thing. Martinelli was there for the tapping. We could be talking about Martinelli scoring the winner today rather than Gabriel because the pass was that good. They don't. I want to see what we saw today with Rice, Eze, and Odegaard at home against Burnley. Just try and blow their socks off, man. Like, seriously, just go for it. Because what's the worst that can happen? What, Kyle Walker's going to sprint a little bit? Please, man. Like, just go for it. So, yeah, there's a world where they both play together and we score like 8 or 9 goals in a game. I'm so sure of it.
Look forward to the day. We're now an hour into this recording and we've only hinted at the best period of the game, which we're now about to enter. And a short corner in the 84th minute saw Rice cross the ball to Mikel Merino and he glanced it in. If I was a pettier man, I would direct this question at coach and be like, hey coach, is that the most creative header you've ever seen in your life, you bum motherfucker? But I'm going to talk to Mitch because Mitch is a more decent human being than coach and he takes walks at halftime because he's healthy. But Merino coming on, making an impact like that, surprised or not, Mitch?
No, not at all. That's his bag. Get it to the big fella who's going to be able to glance it in. It's great. I got to say, I felt nothing when that goal went in. I don't know what's wrong with me today. This game kind of broke me a little bit, I think.
I think Jerry Gillett did that. It's not so much the game. It was Jerry Gillett because the anger you described, I was feeling the same thing the whole time. Like, I was just mad the whole time. Like, I wasn't really texting with people like I usually do. I got into arguments on the internet. I don't do that. Hey, Liverpool fans, one more time from the back, okay? From the back, you know, like, make it sloppy too, motherfuckers. But that said, Gabby, typically we don't do much from short corners. That's sort of why I went with the surprise thing when I asked Mitch the question. Were you surprised that we actually did something? Because once we played the stroke and I was like, here we go again with this bullshit, then next thing I know, the ball was in the net.
Honestly, I was hoping that for all of the talk about Mikel and not Moreno, I mean Arteta, and about how he trains and he makes them, ready for every situation. I don't feel like we do enough training in short corners. I was like, I know we can lop it on the goalkeeper for straight from the corner, but like, why do you guys always look so confused when we play the ball short? Like, It could be so easy. And of course, when we played this time, surprise, 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 we scored. And the way that the ball went in from the header, I swear to God, that was the slowest ball I've ever seen trickle into the net. Like, even Nick Pope looked confused, like, should I jump?
For the cameras, like, bro, do it for the cameras.
I was like, you know what? This is exactly where I want you. This is exactly what I want Mikel Moreno's like position, his role at Arsenal to be. That's what I want him to be, a super sub. I don't want to see you in that midfield. Unless you're playing a striker, you are a super sub coming on to lump balls into the box.
I cannot agree with that. But we don't have time to get into that conversation today, but I do not agree with that at all. Okay. Like, he's a much, just because we don't understand the player yet doesn't mean we just need to like lock him to the bench. That's crazy. Like, you know, whatever.
Listen, man, coach. It is what it is. It's working for him.
Do you know what? I'm kind of in both camps. I think there's games for Merino. There's games for Merino where it's like, yeah, Merino probably should start this game.
Yeah, like Newcastle away.
He probably should get some minutes there. And there's games where it's like, we won't need you because we're already 7-0 up. It's fine, bro. Like, we don't need to roll the dice now. Like, we're good, kind of thing. But yeah, the goal, honestly speaking, this is what I was talking about, the creativity. Like, all three of our midfielders that played today, all of them created at least one big chance today, one way or the other, through their own personal skill sets. That's really encouraging, guys. Seriously, when you actually think about it, maybe Eze might have not... he did actually ask us.
Like,
he did for Jokeric. Again, that's Eze's bag. The way he created it, pretty much only really Eze in our team is going to do that. Running behind the midfield, slip reverse ball kind of thing. All our midfielders today all offered something creatively. That's why our XG was like 2.5. We're a good side, like a really, really good side. And when we're playing well, we're not our best, but when we're playing well, this is the kind of shit we can do where teams don't really know where the threat is going to come from. There's a lot there. And the Marino header is just one of the ways we could have scored today because we created a whole bunch in different ways. So I'm over the moon, man. That's it. Fuck Newcastle, man.
Honestly, guys, I cannot wait to end this recording, even though we have more to talk about, because I just want to go rewatch the game. Like, I'm tired of talking to you motherfuckers. I love y'all, but this is boring the shit out of me. Mitch, Newcastle came right back at us, went down the field, ball ends up at the Langa's feet. He goes to shoot. Gabby goes in with one of those classic big Gabby tackles, cleans it all out, but it brushes his arm. It touched his shin first. So we're thinking to ourselves, we know the rules, right? We've watched enough PGOML in action. We don't know the rules, Mitch says. But how terrified were you that they were going to fuck us on that?
I was positive. I was like, there's not a world where they don't give a handball here. But again, I've been very on the record on this show. I watch a lot of soccer. I will never and have never known what a handball is. I don't know what it is. I will never know. And I was very happy to be wrong. They don't either, bro. 100%. Which is why I thought for sure it was going to be a Newcastle handball and they were going to win. Thrilled that it wasn't. Couldn't tell you why it wasn't.
Well, apparently the justification is that in general, well, one, there's a proximity thing. So when the ball hits the defender's hand and the place the ball was kicked from is really close to the defender, that should not be a handball. Then there's the other aspect where if it hits a different part of his body before ricocheting onto his arm, then it shouldn't count as a handball. That said, I've seen referees in different leagues, different competitions go for and against that rule. You know, so once the ball went out for a throw and Jared Gillett did one of these and put his hand on his ear, I was like, oh, here we go again. You know, because I was like, it would be right to just get fucked twice at the same half of the pitch in the same game. Like, I just think it would have been great. It would have been great symmetry. That said, the game continued. And in the 86th minute, I don't know what we were doing, but Nick Pope caught the ball. Good for him. Nick Pope having a good game. Then for whatever reason, he actually thought they could win the game. And he decided to start a quick counter. And he does a sidewinder kick because he thinks he's fucking
Neuer, South
American genius goalkeeper. And he gives it right back to us. He probably gave it to Declan Rice. I'm not sure. I think it was probably Declan Rice because he was every fucking where. And that led to a corner kick. From the corner kick, Captain Fantastic crosses it in. And Big Gabby redeems himself. And all the longtime listeners know who's going to handle us from here. Or let me pause that. Who's going to handle the statement from here?
You just had to say something weird before I start.
It's what I do.
Listen. If anybody's not listening and you're watching, you know the jersey. You've seen this jersey many a time. I'm wearing the Gabriel jersey today. He's on the back. Because, listen, redemption. Redemption. There's nothing that Gabriel loves more than an away day. There's nothing that he loves more. And I've been waiting patiently for his first goal this season because the games have been going on and our set pieces haven't been hitting the way they're supposed to be hitting. I'm like, where's this first Gabriel goal going to come from? Like, who is it going to come from? I was hoping it was against City at home. But alas, he said, I'm going to keep that for your dumbasses at St. James Park. Say less. Yeah. In the middle of a I'm not done. Don't start talking. In the middle of a fucking crowd. In the middle of a fucking crowd. Goalkeeper on your head top trying to get flail at the fucking ball. It's not for you, bro. It's not for you. Keep your ass in the fucking net. That's what you get. And the shush to the crowd afterwards, yeah, shut the fuck up.
It's a little dance as well that I loved, honestly.
Oh my God, I loved it.
Daughter or something, I'm guessing. Probably. I don't know, because we're not a dancing team anymore. We haven't done dances for celebrations in a long time, you know. I quite enjoyed it. We kind of skipped over it, or I skipped over it, my bad. I liked Marino redoing the goal, like doing his jump for the goal after the celebration. Then no one followed him because we were like, bro, we got to go win this game, man. It's like, all right.
No time for celebrations yet.
Gosh, Coach, did you want to add anything else on that goal while Mitch struggles with his cat?
I really just enjoyed the fact that there's a lot of stories here today that some players that people aren't a fan of.
Sorry, Pim is fucking you up.
This cat is trying to kill Mitch.
I wish I saw, honestly. There's a lot of stories today with players that, you know, people might not be fans of, or they haven't been playing well and shit, or they might just be a victim of the coach picking them for certain games when you know, majority of fans wouldn't have, like, Mourinho getting the equalizer today, and then Odegaard setting up the winner and playing it incredibly well. Those two for me stick out so much, and I couldn't be happier for Odegaard especially, and Gabriel doing what he does. I think there's we'll talk about this for years to come, but Gabriel for me is one of our most dependable players in the big moments. It's just a fact of life. Gabriel won't let you down, man. That I don't think there's probably been a more improved player and a more improved player year on year than Gabriel since he joined the club. I just think he's, and it's not to say that other players haven't improved, but I think that the level that keeps going up every year. I'm having Man United fans tell me every day, like, Gabriel's the best in the league. Like, Man United fans, they don't know shit about football. They know nothing about, they know less than nothing about football, but they know about Gabriel.
You're on mute.
Dean, can't hear you.
You're on mute.
It's for the best. I was talking about breast milk. Carry on.
We'll say, I did see a fucking Chelsea player, I mean, a Chelsea fan tweet and say that Gabriel is inevitable on corners. And I said, I'm glad that you fucking know that.
Yeah, I mean,
just know that we waiting at your park too.
He's banged their head on corners before as well. So they better know. But to wrap this part up, yeah, generally, this can be like pretty much like the Kai Havertz sort of moment, even though we lost that game again to shitty refereeing. This can be a moment for the entire team where we, like, we haven't won at St. James Park for a while. We played incredibly well, won it at the death kind of thing. We've got the win. We generally have the win behind us because out of everyone's start, we clearly had the hardest now. So now we've got this confidence of beating Newcastle, beating United, you know, getting a late draw against City kind of thing. Everybody else should be really scared now. Like, you have to be scared of us. I'm sorry, you do. And I think we know that. So let's play that way, man. There's a lot for us to get through this year with a lot of quality players. Yeah, we're in a great position, man.
Mitch, I'm glad you survived Pibb's assault.
Me too.
But before we get out of here, I want to ask a question about what Andrea Berta did this summer. Would you say that, given what we've seen in the first, is this our sixth game of the season? Sixth? Within the first 5-6 weeks of the season, have the results already justified the decision to go deep on depth instead of lumping all the money on one really good player, Isak?
I think the injuries we've had has justified going deep on depth. The fact that Madueke was one of our best players to start the season and he's out for 2 months. Kai Havertz out for 2 months. Like, we have so many long-term injuries out right now. And the fact that we still, even with those players missing, were able to, like, Wanyeri wasn't in the squad today. Like,
shit, I didn't even know.
Yeah, he traveled with them, but he wasn't in the squad.
Where Ethan Wanyeri doesn't make a match day squad. But Dalman does. Like, we have a lot of options, which is crazy. So, like, even with these injuries. Yes.
Okay.
I would love to see Incapié, but, you know.
Yeah,
I just want a little bit of everybody's alive at the same time so we can see who makes the bench, but alas.
We'll get there someday. It was also nice to see Miles come off the bench to kind of close things out in the final, I don't know, like 4 minutes of the game. But yeah, guys, I think we've done more than enough here today. We almost certainly... None of us expected I think we all went into this expecting to win because we know how good our team is, but it was also St. James's Park and it's a difficult fixture and we witnessed a lot of losses there. So I hope by now, Mitch, that you're feeling a little more ecstatic. Do you feel the joy yet, or has your cat slapped the fuck out of you?
My cat slapped the fuck out of me and now I'm just mad. So.
Well, we're going to leave you alone to go fight your pussy. As for the rest of y'all, y'all know what to tell the people.
Peace.
Fuck Jason Tindall.
I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Plantain, plantain.